Welcome, everyone, to episode 2. So you think you have Nutcracker Syndrome. Maybe you've actually already been diagnosed and you were here, and I am so sorry about that. Or maybe you think that you have Nutcracker and you're kind of on the journey to getting diagnosed. So this episode is going to be all about kind of what is Nutcracker Syndrome. Some of you might already know. And then I'm going to get into the nitty-gritty, of my story on how I found out I have Nutcracker Syndrome. I'll talk about the signs and symptoms of Nutcracker for those that might believe that you have it. And just before we even get into that, just understand the signs and symptoms can be all over the place. And I think my story will kind of help you all to see that. So a lot of people are getting diagnosed with things that are a little bit of a side quest when Nutcracker might actually be the big kahuna that we're trying to get to that can address all the other things. And talk about my journey from gynecology into vascular compressions. As I know that some of you actually have, unfortunately, a very similar story to me. So let's get started. What is Nutcracker Syndrome? Some of you might already know, obviously. Nutcracker Syndrome is where the left renal vein is compressed between the aorta and the superior mesenteric artery. Now, that's kind of the classical. It's between that. There's also other types of Nutcracker where people might have a different anatomy, meaning that their left renal vein can be compressed between the spine and the aorta. At the end of the day, if you boil it down, Nutcracker Syndrome is that there is a compression of the left renal vein around the level of anatomy that it is at. Okay. My whole journey started out, I had no idea vascular compressions were a thing. I was frolicking, just so some of you all know, I was living in a van full time, traveling the country and Mexico when my first symptoms happened. So I was a little kind of suspicious. I didn't know anything about vascular compressions. So my journey started in the Nutcracker world, November of 2022, prior to being diagnosed with Nutcracker, not even being aware that there was something called Nutcracker Syndrome, which I was finally diagnosed. So my first symptoms started November 2022, and I wasn't diagnosed until July 2024, which is 1 year and 8 months. That's not meaning that I didn't have the Nutcracker anatomy, this entire time. To my knowledge and some of my own research, people still are not fully aware of, why somebody gets Nutcracker Syndrome. Was I born with this? I have my own working theories. I just had my kidney auto transplant surgery, at UW Health with Dr. Foley in Madison, Wisconsin on December 19th, 2024. So as of the recording date of this episode, which is March 20th, 2025, we are 3 months and 1 day since my kidney auto transplant, which has actually done wonders for me. But the road to getting here was actually a little bit of a crazy one. They were gynecological issues that were masking my vascular issues. So my first symptom in November of 2022 was that I was bleeding black tar-like junk from my vagina. It was not associated with my period. I was not on my period. And I remember mentally being like, this is a red flag. But as some of you may be listening to this podcast understand, we talk ourselves out of going to the ER or a medical doctor because we just get gaslit. Our blood work is normal. Scans are normal. We're told nothing's wrong. So I was actually on my way down to Mexico at this time. Again, I was living out of my van. So I decided to put a pin in it. And I continued down to Mexico, decided we're going to put a pin in this medical issue that I feel like is arising, and we'll just see if it happens again. Maybe this is just a fluke situation. So I go down to Mexico for 3 months, and it was March, I believe, I start to have more kind of weird symptoms, black tar, like bleeding, vaginally. I remember this very, very specific moment of, I was sitting on the beach with my friends, chatting about something. I was not stressed. I'm sitting on the beach with my friends, and this major, major rush of energy just came over me, and I got very angry and very irritated. And I looked at my friends out of nowhere, and I was like, I need to go to my van And I go in my van and I realized I was bleeding really badly. So again, another pin in it. I'm in Mexico too. So I was like, oh. So I went ahead and called back some of the doctors in the States, got a gynecology appointment scheduled for May of 2023, and decided, you know what? I've always suspected I have endometriosis. So let us go and explore that now because I can't avoid these signs. I go to a OBGYN, of which I learned that I didn't do my research properly. I, like most people, just assumed every OBGYN is well-versed in endometriosis, and they can all perform excellent surgeries. I had no idea. So I go in, I see this OBGYN who is not an expert in endometriosis. I have my first diagnostic laparoscopy in at the end of June of 2023, and am woken up to be told, you don't have any endometriosis. Your left fallopian tube is extremely enlarged. You have some 3-centimeter paratubal cyst on that left fallopian tube. And your uterus looks like it has adenomyosis, but no endometriosis. So I was a little suspect of that. Oh, and I was told I had a lot of scar tissue in my abdomen, of which I'd never had a prior procedure that would, or any type of abdominal injury, anything like that. So that was a little suspect, but she closes me up. I go about my life. I'm not getting any better. Nothing changed. If anything, I'm starting to get worse. And 2 months later, well, not even 2 months later, at this point, I'm getting monthly ovarian cyst on my left ovary. And at the 2-month mark, I had an ovarian cyst on my left ovary that was 5.5 centimeters. And again, I'm living in a van by myself, full-time, nomadic, and every single ovarian cyst I've had has ruptured. I've never had an ovarian cyst that has just decided to shrink on its own. And for me, I have very violent ruptures. So what those look like for me is that a cyst will rupture. I'll feel the pop sensation. It doesn't necessarily hurt. And about a couple seconds later, as the content of the cyst, which has been, they've all been hemorrhagic, meaning they've been filled with blood, and that's something important to note for the future of this story, is that the contents spill into my abdomen, I believe it's called peritonitis when it does that, so it irritates the lining, the peritoneal lining of the abdomen, and I then go completely white. About half to 75% of the time, I will pass out. So I'll black out from that experience, and then I wake up and I either have to vomit immediately or use the restroom, go number two. And it's like I have to go right then. There's no waiting. So when I had this 5.5 centimeter cyst, I went in and I said, we have to surgically remove this because I am a nomad. I'm living in a van. I'm driving around a lot. I cannot have this cyst rupture while I'm on the road. That is my safety. That's other people's safety as well. And so they agreed to the surgery. This is August of 2023. So we're looking at 2 months later from my first diagnostic lap. She goes in, removes the cyst. I wake up being told they also found stage 4 endometriosis that was on my bladder. So I was very surprised. How did they miss this? I inquired to her about this. I was told that sometimes if you have your diagnostic lap and you're not on your period, that the endometriosis doesn't show up, or if your estrogen isn't high because endometriosis is fueled by estrogen, then it can be, you can't see it. And I was just like, okay, but I don't understand. Stage 4 is deep infiltrating. So to me, I'm like, stage 4 isn't one of those that just kind of, you know, to me, wouldn't go away. Now, again, maybe some doctors are listening to this and you're like, oh, no, it can do that. That's when I realized she proceeded to tell me that she is not an endometriosis expert, which would have been nice for her to know, and she could have referred me to one, and that endometriosis kind of found her, that's not really her passion. Again, ethically, I feel like those are some things that you should have shared with me in the beginning when I told you that's what I wanted to pursue with you. So I then decided that I didn't want her to be my doctor anymore. I believe in some ways she was very caring and she did listen to me, but I wanted somebody who was an endometriosis expert. And through my own, you know, kind of botched surgeries, I found Dr. Olga Muldoon, that's based out of Denver, Colorado, that has been a saint with me along this entire journey. She is an endometriosis expert. She is MIGS trained, which means she's did a minimally invasive gynecological surgery specialty. I believe that was a 2-year kind of, not an internship. Forget the word. In our world of sports psychology, there are practicums and internships and postdoc work. She had done extra training, and when I met with her, I showed her the photos. She was very confident she could excise it. We were not going to need an interdisciplinary team. I did at that point, when I had met with her, it was now 3 months post-op from my first diagnostic lap. It was September of 2023. She looked at my images and said, yes, I believe you have adenomyosis as well. Looking at these photos, it does seem like that. So I had two opinions of people saying, this looks pretty textbook adenomyosis. I decided then I want to move forward the hysterectomy. We discussed the possible removal of my left ovary, depending on what it looked like once we got into surgery, of which I agreed, yes, remove it as well. Because up to that point, I had been having, again, monthly. I even had 1 month where I had 2 cysts rupture in 1 month, which was felt abnormal. I kept being told they were just follicular hemorrhagic cysts. So when the day came, this is November of 2023, November 1st, actually, of 2023, we did the hysterectomy. We did the stage 4 endometriosis excision, of which we found out my uterus was fused to my bladder at that point. We removed the left ovary because there was a bunch of scar tissue. And we just thought, you know, this is a problem ovary, let's get rid of it. So woke up, feeling really good. Actually, I was day 4 post-op. I was sleeping on my stomach. I just felt like we got these inflammatory monsters out. We addressed the endometriosis. It doesn't mean I'm cured from it. As people with endometriosis know, there's no cure for endometriosis, but I at least, we had addressed that. She had gotten everything that she had seen. She was pretty confident that, like, you're pretty good on the endo front as it stands currently. And I just felt great. I got 2 great full months. I also met my current partner. So we've been together, gosh, going on a year and a couple months now of living together. So I was excited. I was past this major surgery. I just met the love of my life. We started dating. And I just felt like I could start living my life again. And then what happened is 2 to 3 months later, I started getting these weird symptoms again, and they felt very gynecology related. I had a very aggressive ovarian cyst rupture on my right ovary. It was the worst cyst that has ever ruptured for me. To the point I went down, told Kyle, I was like, I'm not feeling good. I go downstairs, the cyst proceeds to rupture, and he comes downstairs to find me on the floor passed out. And it took me a while to kind of recover from that one, but I didn't go to the doctor. I kind of knew what was going on, or I didn't go to the ER. We did a follow-up ultrasound, confirmed, yes, this is a cyst. We're just going to let it run its course, and that it is normal for cysts to occur, not only after a hysterectomy, but also after losing an ovary, because that ovary is now having to learn that it has to do some shit on its own. So I kind of think that she was a little pissed that now she is the sole worker bee and was kind of getting back at me. So, had a little chat with her. I didn't get, another cyst of that caliber, once my hormones started to level out as much as possible, but I was having major fatigue, major brain fog, major lower back pain that just wasn't being addressed by physical therapy. I am an athletic person. I'm a very active person, working out multiple times a week, going in the backcountry, hiking, things like that, cycling. And I got to where I was like slowly not even able to do those things because they were like making my symptoms worse. And I just felt like they were making me slow. Like anytime I would even go do, like, for example, when it really started to become like, this is a problem, I was in a yoga class and I couldn't even get past 10 minutes of yoga and I just have to sit in Shavasana because what was happening is my blood flow was increasing doing these activities, which was making the vascular compressions worse. I didn't know that at the time. So I go to Dr. Muldoon and I'm like, something's going on. I was very desperate at this point. I was like, take my right ovary. I just feel like it's causing me more problems. I don't care if I'm 34, going to be thrown into medical menopause. I'll be on HRT for the rest of my life. Like if this is just the route I have to do, this is the route. And she was very, the thing with Dr. Muldoon, she has never questioned anything I've asked of her, but she's always added to it. So like with my hysterectomy, she never asked if I wanted kids. She just said, done. There we go. Thank you so much. So she was like, listen, I will do whatever you need me to do. Before we do that though, let's leave no stone unturned. And I agreed with that. I was like, yes. Okay, cool. This is where the shift really happened for me, because just a couple months prior to that meeting with her, this was in June of 2024. So we're looking at 7 months after my hysterectomy. So a couple months prior to June of 24, she had met an interventional radiologist in Denver who, I guess that conversation went a little something like talking about the similar symptoms of endometriosis with May-Thurner syndrome. And May-Thurner syndrome is a compression of the left iliac vein that travels from kind of the belly button area toward your left leg, so around your left kind of hip flexor. So it's pretty long, pretty substantially large vein. So Dr. Muldoon said, you know what, you could, it does seem like some of your symptoms could be vascular related. I'm going to refer you to this interventional radiologist in Denver to look at some scans, see what's going on. And fast forward to July 25th, I had my initial appointment with this interventional radiologist, or at least one of her NPs. And I was going in thinking, okay, they're just going to diagnose me with May-Thurner. They're going to pop a stent in there and we'll get back to regularly scheduled programming. Again, I'm in a newly budded love relationship with my now partner, and things are, you know, like, we're supposed to be in a honeymoon stage. So I'm like really motivated to get better. And I go in and the nurse practitioner starts telling me about all these vascular compressions. She tells me about May-Thurner and I'm like, cool, got it. Already looked it up. She starts telling me about Nutcracker and I'm like, God, that sounds like a horrible vascular compression. Glad I don't, you know, I don't have that. Cause she's like, the most successful options are donating your kidney or relocating. And I'm like, God, that just, poor people. She's telling me about superior mesenteric artery syndrome. She's telling me about malls. And I'm just like, okay, well, just like get on with it. I'm just here. Just tell me what the scan says. And at the very end, she's like, okay, so let's look at what your results said. Like, you know, the interventional radiologist had looked at your results and this is what she said. And she read it off. She was like, so it was a little inconclusive on your CT scan on whether you have May-Thurner. But given the symptoms that you have, we do suspect that you do have MTS, May-Thurner syndrome. And she also noted here that you have a very severe case of Nutcracker syndrome. And I did what I just did, which is pause. I got this extremely overwhelming feeling in my chest and I just started bawling because she just got done telling me that the most successful options for that vascular compression were donating the kidney or relocating it. We're talking about a transplant surgery. So I left that meeting. I text Kyle to pack a very heavy bowl. I'm based out of Colorado, baby. We love our weed here. And he knew like something was up. I got home about 45 minutes later. Yay, Denver traffic. And I just looked at him and I like couldn't. I was in shock is what was going on. I was in shock for about 48 hours, sorry. And he's like, what's going on? And I said, well, it's inconclusive on May-Thurner, but they do believe I have it. But I have a severe case of something that's called Nutcracker syndrome. And I'm either going to have to get rid of my kidney or relocate it. And I was like, there's other options too. Like I can do the transposition, left renal vein transposition. I can do the stent. And I was like, but I've already been in the ringer medically and I'm not trying, like I personally, again, this is my choice. I didn't want to do a potentially a lesser invasive surgery to a transplant and then that fail to then have to have the auto transplant or have to lose the kidney altogether. I was just done with the terror of it. So I'm in shock. He's like, let's go get some food. You know, so he's really good at like kind of helping distract me. And then 2 days later, so this was on a Thursday, I wake up on a Saturday and I just cry all day. And I remember going, I don't know what's wrong with me. And he goes, I think it's hitting you. And I was like, oh yeah, I think it is too. So I knew, okay, that I had just been diagnosed from a CT scan. So the next step, obviously, is to have the venogram done, which is the gold standard for scans you need to address the compression itself. So I'll go into more detail about this particular scan in a later episode for those that just want to know what was the venogram like. So I had my venogram done, and I had decided, and this might be an unpopular opinion for some, that I wanted to do the venogram, and if I had Mathurner, stick the dang stent in me. So, I know a lot of people, there is an option, just so you all know, that you could do the diagnostic venogram, and you do not have to decide to do the stent that day. You can wake up from that procedure. Mine, I was under anesthesia. Some people are not. You can wake up and then kind of see where the cards fall and then schedule another venogram to insert the stent later. So don't think you have to do it all in one go. I was desperate. I intuitively just knew that's what I needed to do. And I'm still to this day happy with the decision I made. So I go into that procedure. They do the venogram. I had an 87, 88% compression of the left iliac vein. And those scans were pretty wild. It was very clear to see how compressed it was. So they put the stent in. And so I woke up being told the stent was placed. I had an 87-88% compression of the left iliac vein. And I only had, crazy enough, a 48% compression of the left renal vein. And there were no, I didn't have any significant pressure gradients. While there were some collaterals noted that my particular IR decided that, had stated that she felt the Mathurner stent would actually do well, and it was going to help open. Now that pressure valve was open, it would help kind of push the pressure of the left renal vein open, and I wouldn't have to address Nutcracker. I could avoid it. And I was thrilled. I was very thrilled. I loved that information. I wanted to do the Mathurner stent to see if I could avoid Nutcracker. I could avoid a transplant. I got 2 good weeks out of that. And then I remember washing dishes 2 weeks later, just standing there, and all of a sudden my left flank pain just came roaring back. And I want to also say this. A lot of people talk about treating top down for vascular compressions within the Facebook group, on the Reddit, on the subreddits for Nutcracker Syndrome. For me personally, I did not do a top-down approach, meaning that the left renal vein is above the left iliac vein. I did a bottom-up approach, and I actually am happy that I did that. I was able to see where the cards fell after the Mathurner stent on what was actually Nutcracker-related, because while I was having left flank pain prior to Nutcracker, I just felt like my entire body was breaking down, so it was really hard to tell, like, what symptoms were associated with what. And a lot of people that have multiple compressions can, like, confirm this. It's really hard to know. So the stent helps me to see what was actually left, what symptoms were going to pop up. Okay, we know those are likely Nutcracker related. And so looking at the signs and symptoms, so for me, I was having that classic left flank pain. I had a couple instances where I did go to the bathroom and I noticed some blood in my urine. And remember, I had a hysterectomy, so I'm not actually having a period where I'm shedding my uterine lining. So I knew the blood was associated with urinary. But I did have one really bad urinary tract infection that did show microtraces of blood and protein. Now, this is a sticking point for some people, especially some surgeons that treat Nutcracker, is that they're like, you have to have a chronic UTIs and blood or protein in your urine to qualify as Nutcracker. And I just had one, just so everybody knows. They were not chronic. Once we addressed that one with an antibiotic, I didn't have another until, like, at all. I haven't had any urinary tract symptoms since then. So I'm thankful for that one, so that I could go in, I could pee in that cup. They could send it to LabCorp, and LabCorp could say, yes, this is a UTI, and it does have blood and protein. So I at least had the documentation medically for insurance purposes and for the surgeons. So this is just to let you all know, if you think you have a UTI, I highly recommend that you do not just treat it with Azos that you can get over the counter. Schedule with your primary, go in, pee in that cup, so that you can capture that data from a lab. It is going to help with your Nutcracker case, okay? Couple other symptoms. I was having MCAS reaction, which was honestly just stress. Now that I'm kind of post-kidney auto transplant, I really just think it was A, the stress my body was undergoing, and B, I was just very psychologically stressed. I mean, I'm looking down the barrel of a transplant surgery. So I remember the day that I got the call inviting me for my in-person appointment to UW Health. I broke out in hives all over my body. And so there was some of that going on. But MCAs is a comorbidity with these vascular compressions. So that could be something you can go and get checked out. Ask your primary care doc about next steps on getting that diagnosed. I was having digestive issues. Mine was being constipated a lot. Some people, it could be the opposite. I was also dealing with a lot of like a loss of appetite, nausea. So I was having a hard time eating. I didn't have pain with eating. So some people who have superior mesenteric artery syndrome, which is very, very closely located to the left renal vein compression to Nutcracker, they'll actually have pain. Like when they eat anything, it'll hurt. A lot of those individuals will eventually have to be on feeding tubes. That was not the route. Maybe if I would have let the Nutcracker go longer or wasn't able to get into a surgeon in time, I might have gone down that route. But I was definitely having digestive issues, having loss of appetite, major nausea, losing weight because of that. I lost about 15 to 20 pounds on this journey. So which for me was, you know, a lot of people still looked at me and thought I was healthy. So I wasn't necessarily frail. So that's something that they'll actually test for before a transplant surgery, is to make sure that you're the frailty of your body. They want to make sure that you have enough bodily sustenance to withstand a surgery like that. I was having headaches, and the headaches weren't necessarily what I think a lot of people would think a headache would be, just like kind of that front right above your eyebrows. It was a lot of pressure, a lot of lower neck pressure, top of head pressure. I was getting regular massages at this time as well, and they were like, I'd get like 5-10 minutes of relief out of them, and then my body would just go right back to being like my traps and my neck. My upper back was extremely tense all the time. I found out later that that was due to a collateral vein that had wiggled its way from my left renal vein because of the reflux blood. It couldn't get from that compression, so these collateral veins were created, one of which was worked its way into my spine, causing pressure on my spine. I actually had some x-rays done at the thoracolumbar junction where they noted that I had levoscoliosis. It's a left leaning of the spine. I can't necessarily make a direct correlation with what I'm about to say, but it very much felt like that collateral vein was pulling my spine out of alignment toward the problem, so toward the left kidney, because it was located right there. And what's wild is now after this kidney auto transplant, I'm not having any of that thoracolumbar issues anymore, which is great. I was also having POTS-like symptoms. So I was having the increased heart rate, kind of when I would go from sitting to standing or lying down to standing, kind of that I'm about to pass out. All of those type symptoms were going on. So I was going, I wanted to, and there's a lot of other symptoms that maybe some of those people out there are having. Those are the main ones I'm having. So please do not think this is an exhaustive, conclusive list, okay? Again, this is just my story. But what I do want to point out about these symptoms is that, like the chronic UTIs, for example, definitely go see a urologist. So some of the things I do want to recommend is like go and see the specialist for these specific sites, these specific organs, to rule other things out, obviously. So I did go see a urologist to talk about the UTI, for us to talk about, are there other things that could be going on? We realized that I had already had a cystoscopy, I believe that's how you say it, done during my hysterectomy, which showed that the inside of my bladder was good. So we didn't need to pursue that procedure. I had already seen a GI specialist to rule out IBS, other things of that nature. So a lot of it was my just own due diligence of seeing these people so I could prove to insurance that I was leaving no stone unturned. I was just so scared that they'd be like, deny a surgery that I needed because, oh, you didn't go see a urologist. But it's also annoying because nobody's telling you to go do that, and you find out the hard way, right? So some of what I'm giving you here is, I hope, just a little, like, hopefully I'm not giving projecting my anxiety onto you, but hoping to give you a little like, oh, leave no stone unturned. I will go in the next episode, episode 3, I'm going to address who do you see if you think you have Nutcracker, and go into way more detail about what I'm telling you here. But these symptoms, it's important to see that these symptoms, like my back pain, like my neck and my back pain and my thoracolumbar junction pain, I was seeing a physical therapist for that almost as if it was a little, I didn't realize it was associated with Nutcracker. So I was just like, oh, I'm having this back pain. And we went and did x-rays, found the levoscoliosis. And now that I'm post-kidney auto transplant, I'm realizing that was a symptom of Nutcracker. It wasn't its own separate, isolated muscular skeletal thing that a lot of ER docs was telling me, like, oh, this just seems muscular skeletal, you should go see a PT. No, it was actually Nutcracker. My POTS-like symptoms, right? They're like, you need to go see this doctor to get diagnosed with POTS. That was directly related to Nutcracker syndrome. So a lot of these, my fatigue, something else I do want to say about my fatigue and my brain fog. I also, something else that you all can explore during this time is, especially if you are a woman, and also a male as well, is to get your hormones checked. So low testosterone, which I did go get my hormones checked during this time. Again, I was trying to leave no stone unturned, so insurance didn't have a reason to deny me. I had very low testosterone, so I did start testosterone therapy prior to my Nutcracker syndrome surgery, my auto transplant, and I also found out I had low T3. So I didn't have technically hypothyroidism, but my thyroid was really having a hard time. So I started taking medication there to help my thyroid. The hormone replacement therapy did help some of my fatigue and some of my brain fog, but it did not fully go away. Now that I'm post kidney auto transplant, it's gone. I don't have the lymphatic pain. I'm not having the urinary problems anymore. I haven't had a hives reaction. So no more headaches, no more back tension, thoracolumbar is chilling. I might not even have scoliosis anymore. I got to go get another x-ray to figure that out. No more brain fog, no more fatigue. I literally have energy for days, and my body is regenerating itself like it's supposed to. Like when I go to bed at night, I'm sleeping a lot better. That was also another symptom for me. I was not sleeping very well. And always my left flank pain was waking me up every morning. But I go to sleep now and I sleep through the night, fully deep sleep. And I wake up the next day like, oh, okay. Because prior, if I had a big, quote unquote, big day, which was actually, you know, not actually a big day for some, I'd be out for a week maybe after that. So my body's regenerating a lot now. And some other things that were happening too is my health started to decline. I couldn't stand longer than 10 minutes without pain starting. Walking for more than 10 minutes, same thing. If I had intercourse, if again with any exercise, or if I was on my period, so anything that increased blood flow throughout my body exacerbated all the symptoms that I told you about. So those were things that as I got closer to my Nutcracker surgery, that I was horizontal for 80% of the day. If I had to go grocery shopping, I was using one of the motorized carts. It was very stressful, to say the least. So I was a walking dead person, basically. I was soulless. I was crying a lot. I was very emotional. And to remind you, I was in a newly budding love relationship with Kyle. And he is, bless his heart and soul, not the biggest caretaker. He did the best he could during that time. But something that really helped me was finding friends in the community, talking to them about the emotional woes of it, taking the pressure off of Kyle. So those are just some of the things I wanted to chat about, a little bit about my story. I'm also going to link in this episode, I did a recent podcast recording at the beginning of March, I believe, March of 2025, with the Medical Detectives podcast that also details my story. The reason why I want to put you on to this is that there is actually Dr. Nance is on that podcast reporting. So there's a doctor that's on that recording actually affirming some of what I told you here, that does a very good job of actually speaking about the anatomy of what's going on. So if you all want to jump over to the Medical Detectives podcast, they are basically investigating medical mysteries. So I love that they were able to help me share my story. But maybe if you go over there, I just want to give a shout out to them. They're wonderful. Anna is so great, so fierce, so confident. And Dr. Nance was also wonderful to work with. So I'll tag that below so that you can find that podcast recording. And so on the next episode, what I want to go into more detail is about who do you need to see if you believe that you have Nutcracker, kind of that process. Some of it's going to be associated with my story as well. But before you go, I just want you to take a very quick second to wherever you are, to just take a nice deep breath in through your nose. And then slowly exhale. And then another deep inhale through your nose, feeling your chest expand. And then slowly exhale. And just keep with that flow at your own pace for as long as you would like, as you maybe transition into listening to the next episode or you go about the rest of your day. But whatever is next for you, I just want you to give yourself a big hug for doing the best you can right now, for being your biggest advocate, even with the little amount of energy that you have. Keep going. Keep giving 100% of the maybe just 15% you have, okay? You are doing your best. I see you, and I love you.